Morning, Dennis.
Morning, Aaron.
How are we doing lately over the last few weeks? Everyone's been sick. You've been sick?
Yeah, I've been sick. I've struggled for a few days there, but coming right, I think. Hopefully a bit of sun helps.
Let's start off with the difficult news, which, well, everyone knows about what's been happening at what has happened at Papanui Point once again. From a council perspective, a community board perspective, is there anything you can offer or suggest or just... Well, again, any thoughts, I guess, really. Yeah, I'm not even sure if that is a community board place.
Well, I guess it's within the new community board boundaries that we've, with the extended boundaries out that go out to Tamata and that sort of thing. You could argue that's within that area. But, you know, the council looks after the footpath. I believe the land's owned by regional council, or they have jurisdiction over some of the land there.
Well, that's like the shoreline's kind of their business,
their business in the track down, probably. But as far as, I think, you know, it comes back to this thing about educating people. When do you fish there and when don't you fish there? You know, if you look at it from a sort of a drone type of view, an aerial view and that sort of thing, it's a pretty rugged little bit of headland that sticks out into the ocean on that southern side of the mountain.
Yeah.
So it's very exposed. It's really exposed to any swell coming up from the south and things like that. So, you know, people do have to consider when they swim there. Over the years, their life buoys have been put out there. There's been lots of signage put up at different times. I'm not sure what the signage says that's there at the present time, because it's been a long time since I've actually been out there and had a look. It comes back to people actually considering, you know, should we be fishing there on a day like today? The problem is you get people that drive out from over the hill.
Yes.
They've driven out there. They want to go fishing. They've set their sort of plan for it the day before. And when they get there and it's marginal, they still go fishing instead of saying, well, no, we better go home.
And is the problem also, like, you could stand there for 10 minutes and look at the waves and go, okay, that looks all right. But then there'll be a big wave come through unexpectedly, which we should expect unexpected waves, shouldn't we?
Well, yeah, you know, the seventh, they always argue that the seventh wave is the bigger wave and that sort of thing. So you are going to get bigger swells from time to time. So I guess it's a matter of whether they're getting caught out when they're actually fishing or when they're getting caught out when they're trying to retrieve a fish. I'm not sure.
Yeah, yeah. If, aside from signs, yeah, there's not much else.
It's very difficult to completely stop people going there and fishing. You know, I think that would be an impossibility. Even if you erected barriers, people are going to climb over them and go fishing.
Yeah.
It's just the way we respond, we act, I guess. You know, but for me, more the concern is the guys that have to actually respond. You know, the Coast Guard over the years have had to respond. You know, I remember years ago they picked up a guy that was still conscious and they had to give him CPR all the way, you know, way home, and things like that. This time we got Coast Guard, Surf Life Saving, and a helicopter out there looking for these guys. So all these guys are putting themselves at risk as well while this is happening. So, you know, you would say people really consider, do you need to go fishing today? Is the conditions right?
Yeah, yeah. It's never on a flat, smooth day that the Coast Guard gets called around there, is it?
No.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, all right. Let's move on to... Well, actually, that just occurred to me that related about the car park down there. Was that the one that got washed out back in... I'm going to ask you a question you won't have an answer to.
No, it was a different one. That was the one to access to Ruapoki Beach. The road got washed out.
Do we know if that...
I was told the other day that it has been reinstated, but someone more local would probably tell us whether that is the case or not.
Dennis, do you not always believe when you've been told things like this?
I've been told indirectly from someone within council that it's been done, but,
okay,
you know, yeah, I do like to check to see what it looks like and how it's been reinstated and is it what we expect.
Could be a different car park they were thinking of, who knows?
Possibly.
Possibly, yeah. So we had a community board meeting a few weeks ago, and I don't think I've spoken to anyone from the council since then. There were things that came up in the open forum. They were reminded again about the fluoride issue. What do you want to say about that? Community locals are concerned that they don't want fluoride in the water. That's the basis of it.
Yeah, that's what some people are saying. My understanding for council, they've advised us that they won't be doing anything, they won't be putting fluoride into any water that presently doesn't have fluoride until they get a letter directing them to do so from the Director General of Health.
Which they haven't had.
Which they haven't had at this stage. Yeah. So I would imagine while the court cases, proposed court cases going on, then that's probably not going to happen.
Okay. My interpretation of things appears to be that the one of the tactics of the campaign is to try to get councils to pressure the government on the, on this issue. Am I reading that right?
Well, I'm sure that's right. I'm sure the people that are coming to our meeting, putting pressure on the community board, are looking for the community board to put pressure on council, and that sort of thing.
On up the chain,
and then flows up the chain. How effective government is going to, how much government would respond to that, I don't know.
That would require the council agreeing, voting to do that to object to government.
Yeah,
just speaking of historically and practically, is that very likely? I've known this council to be very wary of upsetting central government.
Well, a lot of its funding comes from central government, so I guess you have to be cautious to a certain extent.
Right, okay.
But it would also mean that all councillors in all of the Waikato District Council area would have to agree as well that they don't want fluoride. Now, I don't know
what I mean,
view,
or at least a majority.
A majority, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what the view are of people in Te Kauwhata, Pokeno and these sorts of things. So we did ask the question, what was council's stance on it, and they've just come back with that statement at the present time, which really isn't, I guess, considering what, well, I'm not aware that it takes into consideration what other areas are of the district, what their views are.
Are we the only water supply, town water supply in the district that isn't fluoridated, or is no? Who knows? You're the community board chairperson, not the council, not the mayor.
Yeah, and I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Is the community board going to get to a point where it has to vote amongst itself to decide to pursue the matter, or what do you think at this point?
Well, I think at this point our view is that we'll just see what the outcome is of the so-called case that's going on at the present time.
Okay.
Then we'll have to review it. Then we'll have to have a look at talk to people that are pro-fluoriders against those that are anti, and come up with a view across the board.
Yeah. Okay. Other things that were talked about, the internal bus service, the long-discussed internal bus service. Did you guys have a meeting with the regional council staff?
We had a meeting with the consultants that are working with council,
yes.
And that sort of thing, which we talked about at the last meeting, and we're waiting for the outcome of that. I've actually asked for an update for this community board meeting on September the 6th.
Okay. Was it progressing in a way that you were happy with?
At that point it was, but like all things, you take the foot off the pedal and it grinds to a halt. So hence the reason I've asked for an update for this community board meeting on September the 6th, and hopefully we can see some progress.
So you guys said, what is the option? What's the plan at the moment? Let's talk about that.
Now you're starting to stretch my memory, Aaron.
You're looking at an on-demand service, aren't you?
Yeah, it was an on-demand service that would sort of go from Greenslade Road to Upper Wainui Road. And also would take into consideration that there's probably going to be a demand for a run from both ends at around about that time the kids are going to school.
Yeah.
We'd have to do some work with the schools on that to see who would use it.
You can't be at both ends at once.
Well, you can't be at both ends at once, so we'd have to have times, but we can only take about 18 children on the bus at a time too, so,
But there's already a bus that goes out to the bays, the surf beaches.
Yeah, there's a bus that goes out that way. So what that picks up and how close in, but where does it? Normally the buses don't pick up in the first 3 kilometres or so.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah,
so there might be a gap between the school and Upper Wainui Road, after which then the bus starts to pick up, and those kids that are closer may want to ride.
Yeah, it's like the first 5 or 6 kids, or the furthest ones, they don't get them. They go to about where the 6th one lives. I'm pulling that number out of the air, but they won't go to the very last person at the end of the line.
Oh, well, they're more likely to get him.
The school buses, I mean.
Yeah, they're more likely to get him than they are the one that's 2K away from school. But we'd have to have a look at that with the school and just try and work out a plan. But for the general people, it would be a non-demand service. So you could book it the day before. Ring up and say, I want to go into town. I've got a doctor's appointment at 10 o'clock. Get the bus to pick you up at 9:45, something like that. And then they, you know, they could drop you back whenever you're ready as well. So that's the approach. By doing our on demand, it then gives us a bit of a feel going forward where people, which where in the community do people want the bus service to really go to, and who's going to use it.
Yeah.
So you know, we might get 50 calls from Lorenzen Bay each day. Well, probably won't get that many, but
yeah,
the majority of calls from Lorenzen Bay. Well, then you'd say, right, we need to loop down into Lorenzen Bay and out again if we made it a fixed timetable.
Yeah.
Plan in the future.
And would there be a charge?
No, in the initially we said for the trial period there wouldn't be a charge. It would be free, try and encourage people to use it. The amount of money we would make from charging for it, it's probably, we'd probably recover less than it would cost to put in a system to collect the money.
Oh, yeah, I was interested that the consultant said that like other bus services recover 5%, maybe at most 10% of the cost of running the bus with their fare. And I was, yeah, and I was thinking, why do they even bother? Like,
well, you do, and the question's gone through my mind. But let's trial it. Let's see.
Yeah, you're not going to do it here anyway.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, and let's get a bit of a feel for it. You know, we are we've got an old. There's elderly people that want to use it. There's young people that have said they want to use it, and things like that. So let's trial it and let's see how effective it is, and whether it's something that we continue for the long run.
Okay.
I guess the other thing that we've asked at the same time is that the 23 bus runs, where at the present time not every 23 bus goes out to Manu Bay, as I understand it.
Yeah.
So we've asked that the 23 bus, and they've offered that it will run out to Manu Bay on each journey it does in and out of Raglan.
Is that to save the smaller bus going out there?
Well, because at the moment we haven't got the smaller bus going all the way to Manu Bay. We've got it stopping at Upper Wainui, so it would allow people to use the 23, or if they still want the on-demand, we can probably look at that anyway.
So this is kind of a trial, an experiment. How long does the experiment last? The trial? I shouldn't call it an experiment.
We were talking about 9 months, but I'm not sure when the 9 months starts. So, I'll have to confirm that for you.
Actually, the start question is an important one too. I presume you want to get it ready for the summer.
Yeah, we're definitely driving for having it in place for summer, yes.
Yeah, okay. All right, civil defence issues. I know that there's been discussions. You guys are working with staff to get a civil defence plan for the community. How are we doing?
Yeah, it is progressing. We at this stage we're probably looking at having a public meeting with interested parties sometime late in next month.
Okay, end of September.
End of September.
Because our councillor's away, so...
Yeah, so yeah. I've sort of said that because Lisa's back on the 6th, around about the 6th of September, I think. It'd be 2 or 3 weeks after that. We just get everything into place and make sure we've got all the right people attending and things like that, having it towards the end of September, yep.
Okay. The We Nearer Walkway, I always feel the need to explain, this is the walkway from the Bow Street jetty round past the bridge to what's around the boat ramp at the other end, the fire station. So...
Yep.
Engineers said it was going to fall into the sea eventually, or sooner rather than later. So that's my summary. What's been done?
Well, it's been there 100 years, Aaron. I'll challenge you on it falling into the sea, but
I was being dramatic for, you know, we've got to be entertaining here, Dennis.
There is a bit of work being done on it. There's project managers been appointed, and they are working with Hibs to come up with a practical solution.
What or who is Hibs?
Hibs are the contractor that we're looking at using down on the wharf. So we're talking to them about options and that sort of thing. And there's probably two stages to the project, the way it's shaping up. One will be from the jetty to the bridge. Because that part of the walkway is in a lot better condition than the bit from the bridge to the fire station.
Yeah.
So it'll probably be done in two stages. And so hopefully we'll have a bit more we can tell on that in the next 4 to 6 weeks on where that'll be heading. But we're certainly looking at replacing the water pipes that go across to Papahua.
So do they travel under that footpath?
They travel under that footpath and then across the bridge. There's also power to be replaced in there for the lighting. That'll be along that, the existing lights that are already there, as well as sort of trying to widen the footpath out to the recognised 2 metres wide that we've got everywhere else.
Okay, and a handrail?
And a handrail, yeah.
Okay.
So Yeah, there's certainly work going on in the background there, and it's one of the priority jobs that we're pushing along.
Okay. That doesn't mean it'll be ready by summer. I know the amount of time it takes to get something organised like that, so...
No, well, certainly the Bit Bridge to the fire station won't be done. Hopefully we may have something on the other bit. We'll wait and see.
Yeah, obviously can't do both ends at the same time because no one will be able to use the bridge.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, you mentioned the wharf before. You said to me when you came in there was a blessing for the wharf recently.
Yeah, we had the blessing for the Western Walkway, so the final stage of the work that's got to be done down there. So this is the walkway that will go along from the existing walkway, that wooden boardwalk, along the western side of the silos all the way to, well, it won't go right to the Dolphin, but it goes to where Tony Sly's pottery shop is.
Yeah.
You know, so that work there is probably in the, I didn't call down there, didn't go past there this morning to have a look, but I understand that work was going to start about the middle of the month, so they should be kicking off this week or next week.
Okay.
On that.
When's it supposed to finish?
The work, we're trying to get it finished by Christmas. The consents are all through, so I think, you know, we're on the way forward now. So the aim is to get it finished by Christmas. So if it doesn't all get finished by Christmas, what's here will be, you know, we'll demobilise, and then we probably won't come back until about February. So yeah, there won't be any work over that key Christmas period. But with a bit of luck, we'll get everything done.
Yeah, it always, having worked in the building industry, the phrase "get it done by Christmas" is always one that doesn't have good omens for me.
Yeah, no. Well, there's different things in place to probably push the job along this way. Let's say that, push it along a bit faster than the eastern side went.
Yeah. Now there was a lot of talk about Freedom Camping a little while ago. Where is that? The council's reviewing its bylaw, which means we review the places where people are not allowed to Freedom Camp in Raglan. Where's that process at?
The public submissions closed on Friday.
Okay.
So
last Friday. Yep.
Yep. So I know quite a few people did put in public submissions. A couple came to me, and we forwarded them on.
Yeah.
And that sort of thing. So they have closed. So now I don't know what day off the top of my head, the hearing was going to be, but it was on the council website.
So this is when people go to speak.
Yeah,
to
when people
to a panel.
Can speak to their
if they want to,
yeah, to their submission. Hopefully, well, we want that finished and wrapped up before Christmas as well.
Yeah, so is someone from the community board going to speak to council about that?
Kerry did our submission. I'm not sure whether she said she'd go and speak to it or not. I'll have to check with her. I did a submission of my own, which I've asked to speak to.
Okay, just as an individual?
As an individual, yeah.
Okay.
I guess one of the concerns is that here we're still battling with getting this Freedom Camping and getting council to agree to Freedom Camping around where we've actually got toilets for some reason. So, you know, we're flagged that those areas really do need to have what we call restricted Freedom Camping. So you can camp there from sort of 5 p.m. to 8 a.m. type of thing, but you've got to be gone outside those hours.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, you've got places like Joyce Petrel Memorial Park beside the museum there, which is probably ideal for Freedom Camping. Whereas they're saying they're going to allow Stewart Street to be restricted. Well, to me, you've got more people living on Stewart Street than you, and you've got the church and everything there. Whereas if you moved them 100 metres down to Joyce Petrel Memorial Park, that would be less of a problem.
Do you think that's one of those things where they went, all those car parks are not designed for camper vans?
Well, I don't know the logic.
I mean, the reality is you would just, as a camper van, you just would park across the lines. Like, there might be three
exactly.
camper vans there, but the councils can't go with that sort of thing, can they? Because there's a line and you have to follow the line.
I'm not sure, Aaron. I'm not going to comment.
You're not going to agree with that one?
I'm not going to disagree.
Okay. Thank you. That's good. We had a chat at the last community board meeting. Rick Thorpe was there from Raglan. I never get the name right. Is it Community Energy? Community Energy Whangaroa. Community Energy Whangaroa. There we go. I found my notes. It's not really your thing to talk about, but I just thought it was interesting that they're going to try and use locally produced electricity to help with energy poverty. I mean, that sounds like a good thing. I need to get Rick in for a chat about that.
Yeah, I think the principle there, what they're trying to do, is interesting. I know they did talk to one group that looking to put solar panels on there, on the roof of that public build or that community building, and the community organisation sort of asked the question, well, why wouldn't they get some benefit from it? You know, which is the one that sort of sticks out to me a little bit, is if they were going to put them on a school, then why wouldn't the school get the benefit of the cheaper power rather than give it away?
I guess it's a collective.
So yeah, it's
for the collective best.
Yeah, it's how you sort of how all parties can benefit, which I guess will be a bit of a challenge for them.
Yeah, there's talk about it going on the town hall. I believe some solar panels going on the town hall.
I haven't heard mention of it.
Okay, all right. I don't know where I got that from now. It just was in my head. There was talk about the mayoral awards. The mayor gives out an award to who?
Yeah, apparently, the mayor's, I don't know whether this is something that was historically in place years ago or whether it's just new, but the new mayor has come up with mayoral awards for people within the community who've done service to the community. I get it's a bit like your government awards and that sort of thing. And she's asked for nominations from the community board and from the local councillor. So we've put two nominations in one from the community board and one from the councillor.
Okay.
And that sort of thing. So we'll see where that goes.
Is there like one award for the whole district or is there one for each area?
The way I understand it, there's one from each community board and one from each councillor.
Okay, all right.
So there'll be quite a lot of awards if you take that across the 15 councillors and how many community boards and think the group and community groups there are.
You're not going to tell us now who it is?
No, they'd take all the fun out of it, Aaron. Come on.
I know. I basically answered my own question. But we will hear at some point there'll be an official announcement and a photo opportunity, no doubt.
I would imagine there'll be some sort of ceremony and that sort of thing, yes, and an announcement for sure.
Yeah. You've been discussing Soundsplash behind the scenes. Is there much to say about that? Tickets seem to have sold or been on sale?
Those that have read the newspaper know as much as I do. I have actually asked Alison Diaz, who's our council representative at a community board meeting, for an update at the next community board meeting. So I'm hopeful that someone will come along and update the community board on what additional land use consent requirements I've placed on Soundsplash this coming year to alleviate all the issues that associated with the bus travel from their airstrip out to Wainui Reserve. We were hoping we would have got some feedback by now, but we haven't. So I've actually asked for a report for this community board meeting.
Okay. Speaking of things you're asking for reports on, the Manu Bay breakwater, this never-ending story, I forget, we're out waiting for consultants to come up with a new plan? Is that...
No, we're waiting for... There's two consultants been contracted to review, how do I put this, review the breakwater and make recommendations about what could be done.
Okay.
Is the way I understand it. I'd have to have a good go back now. This has been dragging out for 9 months since the last bloody public meeting.
It's not just 9 months. That's the most recent attempt to resolve it. It's more like 9 years. Don't quote me, folks, on that nine, but I know that when Councillor Baddeley was still our councillor.
2016 and rings a bell, Aaron.
Yeah. Well, you're involved with the fishing club, aren't you? So you're probably aware.
Well, I'm a member off and on.
Right, okay. Not involved at all running it.
No. Stay away from that. There's plenty of more capable men there doing that than me and women.
Yeah, okay.
That's way overdue, and Alison was asking questions about it. So, again, it's something we've got to put the heat on.
But so for folks who are wondering what we're talking about, because there's a lot of inside knowledge behind everything we said, the breakwall was replaced quite a few years ago, and the fishing club in particular wasn't happy with the results. I've seen photos of large boulders sitting on the boat ramp, the sort of thing that would lurk just below the water for someone to discover the difficult way as they're coming in with their boat. So obviously things weren't perfect. It seems to have... There's been lawyers involved, and it seems to be one of those issues that's very hard to get resolved. I don't know why.
No, I don't know why either. The excuse I get is that these consultants have been involved with Cyclone Gabriel. One of them's been offshore a lot, and hasn't been able to, had time to look at it, which if, to me is, well, let's move on and find a consultant that's interested.
yeah.
You know, stop wasting ratepayers' money, although Alison assures me they're not being paid at the moment because they haven't delivered anything. But we do still have issues with the boat ramp. You know, we have to get it cleared regularly for rocks that are washing over. There's a couple of fishermen that loyally ring me and advise me that it needs clearing, so I ring and make arrangements to get it cleared. But, you know, it's going to be ongoing unless we fix the thing.
Yeah, clearly. Okay. There was something else I was about to ask about. Oh, at the meeting, we learned from Alison Diaz, who's the Chief Financial Officer, that for you guys to please not bring any issues unless they're really urgent to the roading team, because they only had two staff members left and the leader of the team was not a roading engineer who was just filling in. Do you know if that's been resolved? Like, that's not good. I know that council is well known that they're having trouble getting enough staff at the moment, but that seemed particularly bad.
No, I don't know if they've appointed anyone or not.
Okay. Maybe we'll find out at the next meeting. Well, you could find out by trying to see if you can get anything done.
You saying that to the public or to me?
To you. You could ask for something to be done and see what happens. Are there pressing roading issues out here at the moment?
Well, I guess it depends where you live and what your view is on it. There's still potholes around that I run into every now and then, and I imagine that the rural country roads, well, they still get graded. I just noticed the road up to Mangakino Road the other day. I went up there yesterday. That's just been recently graded. So the metal roads around the district are still being graded. But, you know, they always need work on them. It depends when they were last graded and how much traffic's been on them.
Yeah.
So there's always roading work. We've got a roading network through Waikato District Council that's pretty extensive for the number of ratepayers, and it's always going to be a challenge.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, is there anything else, Dennis, that you've been working on that we haven't talked about this morning that people need to know about?
I guess the only other thing is the, which I'm surprised you haven't raised, which is the erosion along the foreshore at Papahua, which you normally raise.
I do, you're right, I'm remiss on that.
But we are with council looking at probably getting together in the next 2 or 3 weeks to have a look at that with a couple of people from council. And go back and revisit the issues around the groin. I've asked for a copy of the report that was done about the bridge, the so-called groin effect at the bottom of the bridge and how much effect that is. So I've asked for the report on that. And Megan's agreed to get a meeting set up so that we can have a discussion on what we need to do there.
I know from talking to people, interviewing people at regional council, they're like, we always prefer to use planting to solve a problem. But this is different because this is the groin effect. And if you look at the for people who haven't seen it, there's maps of the shoreline how it used to be, and like in the 1940s, there's this red zigzag line that cuts, some of it cuts across where we've currently got a road. So if you take the groin away, do we end up going back to that situation? And that's critical infrastructure, but a driveway to soccer fields and skate bowls fairly important to some people. So yeah, I'll just put a bit of background there for people. Yep. It is something we're going to have to deal with.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of issues around it. So we're going to have a look at that and see what we can do. You know, the little breakwater that's built in front of the changing sheds, that probably most people don't even know there now because 95% of it's covered in sand.
Yeah, it turned out it wasn't required.
It's actually worked quite well. You can say it worked extremely well.
All that, yeah.
Do you do the same thing on the other side? And you've also got the Europa there along by the boat ramp. End as well.
Yeah.
So there's a whole lot of issues there that we'll start working through and try and come up with a solution for.
It's good to hear something's happening.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, Dennis, thank you for coming in this morning. Oh, and the next community board meeting's a few weeks away.
Yeah, I think it's September the 6th.
Is it
in the supper rooms?
The town hall supper room. Okay. Is it the one after that? You might go out to Tomato.
Yeah, I've got to sort that out with the local with the community board members and we'll probably look at one. We're certainly looking at one at Timara before Christmas.
Okay, all right. Thanks for coming in.